go 2, chapter 9, text 41. Just read 41, we'll read 42. Tam Narada Priyatamo Rikta Danam Anurata Sushu Shamana Shilena Prasraine Navdamena Cha. Narada, the most dearest of the inherited sons of Brahma, always ready to serve his father, strictly follows the instructions of his father by his mannerly behavior, meekness and sense control. Text 42.
Mayam
Vibhishan Vishnu Maya Ishasya
Mahamuni
Mahabhagavata
Rajan
Itaram Priyatoshanyat Mayam Vibhishan Vishnur Maheshasya
Mahamuni
Mahabhagavato
Rajan
Itaram
Prayatoshayat
Mayam
Energies
Vividishan,
desiring to know.
Vishnu,
of the personality of Godhead.
Maya Ishasya,
of the master of all energies.
Mahamuni,
the great sage.
Mahabhagavata,
the first class devotee of the Lord.
Rajan,
O King,
Pitaram,
unto his father,
Paryatoshayat,
very much pleased.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Narada, very much pleased his father, and desired to know all about the energies of Vishnu,
the master of all energies. Narada was the greatest of all sages and greatest of all devotees, O King. Purport. Lord Brahma, being the creator of all living beings in the universe, is originally the father of several well-known sons like Daksha, the Chatusanas, and Narada, and three departments of human knowledge disseminated by the Vedas, namely fruit of work, Karmakanda, transcendental knowledge, Gyanakanda, and devotional service, Upasana Kanda, Devarshan Narada, inherited from his father, Brahma, devotional service, whereas Daksha inherited from his father, fruit of work, and Sanaka, Sanatana, etc., inherited from their father, information about Gyanakanda, the transcendental knowledge. But out of all of them, Narada is described here as the most beloved son of Brahma, because of good behavior, obedience, meekness, and readiness to render service unto the Father. And Narada is famous as the greatest of all sages because of his being the greatest of all devotees. Narada is the spiritual master of many famous devotees of the Lord. He is the spiritual master of Prahlad, Dhruva, and Vyas, down to the forest animal hunter, Kirata. His only business is to turn everyone to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Therefore, all these features of Narada make him a dearmost son of his father, and all this is due to Narada's being a first-class devotee of the Lord. The devotees are always anxious to know more and more about the Supreme Lord, the master of all energies, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 10.9. Matchitak matkata prana bodhiyantak parashparam katayantastramam nityam tushanti charamanti cha. The Supreme Lord is unlimited and His energies are also unlimited. No one can know them completely. Brahmaji being the greatest living entity within this universe and being directly instructed by the Lord must know more than anyone within this universe, although such knowledge may not be complete. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to ask about the unlimited Lord from the spiritual master and the disciple succession of Brahma, which descends from Narada to Vyas, from Vyas to Shukadeva Goswami, and so on. Mayam vividishan vishnur mayeshasya mahamuni mahabhagavato rajan pitaram paryato shayat. Narada very much pleased his father and desired to know all about the energies of Vishnu, the master of all energies, for Narada was the greatest of all sages and the greatest of all devotees, O King. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pradistaya Buddhaya Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivari Pasipatya De Satarane. Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of the Mahajans. Mahajana Yena Katha Sapanda. Because we need examples to follow. And here it explains why Narada is specifically a Mahajan. Because he's one of the primary Mahajans. Swayambhura, Narada, Shambhu. Both Brahma is mentioned here and Narada is mentioned here. And Narada says, Shushushama in the previous verse. Shushusha Sharadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahatsevaya Vipra Punyatirte Nishevana. And here Shushushama is translated as always ready to serve. Actually, the word here is Shushu. Su means Shu or Su means very nicely, and Shu comes from Shruti. That is, Shruti means accepting by simply hearing. In other words, real hearing means with the desire to serve. When we're hearing something, we cannot actually factually hear it unless we're willing to do something. So there's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smarana. Unless there is Kirtan, then it's doubtful that there was actually Shravanam. Or if there's really Shravanam, if we actually hear it, then there'll be automatically, there will be Kirtana. And if there is actually Kirtana, the result will immediately be Smarana. So the real test of whether or not we're engaged in hearing is Kirtan and Smarana. This is Sri Rupa Goswami's explanation. Tannama Rupacharitadi Sukirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasana Manasini Oja Tishtan Vraje Tanuragi Jananugami Kalamnayat Itipidesha Saram. From Krishna comes remembrance. So the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely hearing and chanting about the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes. In this way, gradually engage the tongue and the mind. One should live in Goloka, Braj, and serve Krishna under the guidance of the Lord's devotees. And one should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. And the explanation that Prabhupada gives in the purport deals with the fact that our mind goes everywhere. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. And Prabhupada cites the psychologists who agree with us, at least in that the mind is very difficult to control. And generally speaking, all kinds of thoughts arise and we don't even know where they come from. Generally speaking, we start thinking, oh yes, I'm quite advanced, no problems with the material energy. Then all of a sudden Maya manifests 15 different visions of the material energy and we become completely overwhelmed. Therefore, how to actually engage this mind in Krishna's service? So, different verses are cited, especially sadhaka, siddha sadhaka rupena. That both in the siddha stage and the sadhya stage, that one has to live in Goloka, has to put the mind in Goloka and follow in the footsteps of advanced devotees. So how to do that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada recommends that we should live in a spiritual place. In other words, if the atmosphere is spiritual, it's much more easy to engage the mind in spiritual subject matters. But even if the atmosphere is spiritual, as it mentions here about Narada, here it says, Shilena. So we've heard this word yesterday. Anu Shilena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uchite. As part of the definition of pure devotional service. So here it's translated by good behavior. So we have many derivatives of that in Sanskrit. But Anu means continuously. Continuously good behavior means to follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas. To always be meditating on the previous instructions coming through the civil succession. So this Anushilanam in here, that's what good behavior is, and Amena. So good behavior means to engage the senses in the service of Krishna. Without engaging the senses and the mind in the service of Krishna, then how can we say that our behavior is good? It may be good from the worldly aspect, from the spiritual aspect, it's not really good. So Narada is actually a very good son because he's a pure devotee of Krishna and always engaged in Krishna's service. Although here it says Daksha and also the Chatursanas, the four Kumaras, they're also good, but they're certainly not as good as Narada. Therefore, we have to make the atmosphere spiritual so we can absorb the mind in Krishna's service, and we have to give up material motivations. Because although the atmosphere may be very spiritual, but if we want to take advantage of the spiritual atmosphere for something other than spiritual life, then it won't be very conducive. It won't be very beneficial for us. And then we have to engage the mind, especially in hearing, constantly hearing and chanting. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's advice, hearing, and then, of course, a perfect devotee like Pariksha Maharaj, he could actually hear. But we, in order to actually be able to hear, we have to not only hear, but we have to try to practice and follow what we've heard. So here is Shilanam, we have to manifest good behavior and Dhamena, we have to engage in the senses in Krishna's service. So Kirtan means not just by speaking, but also by manifesting what we're saying. Apani Acharya Bhakti Shikaimu Shabari. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he not only preached, but he also followed. So following is actually bigger kirtan than just preaching. To set the example, Yad Yad Acharya Shrestas Tad Tad Eve Turo Janaha Siyat Pramanam Kurute Lokas Tad Anuvartite. Whatever action a great person does, everyone follows. Prabhupada gives the example, the teacher may keep constantly say, you must not smoke. But if the teacher is smoking, then what will the pupils think? Well, if it's good enough for the teacher, then why can't I take a few puffs? So actual teaching is not only instruction, but also by following. So Narada, of course, he's preaching, telling everyone to take up devotional service, but, as it says here, he's also very inquisitive about devotional service. It's not that Mahabhagavat means that now I've reached perfection and that I have nothing more to learn. No, Mahabhagavat means the person is most anxious to learn something, who thinks that actually I don't hardly know anything, that Krishna is so unlimitedly great that I want to find out more and more about him and how he's interacting with all his diverse energies. So the Mahabhagavat is the person who's constantly engaged, constantly desiring to hear more and more about Krishna. And not only to hear more and more about Krishna, but whatever he hears, immediately he puts into practice. Whatever he hears from the great devotees, from the Acharyas, immediately he serves. Shushusha, Shradhanasya, Vasudeva Katarushi. So this elevates us to the platform of really a taste. Taste is the beginning of the higher stages of devotion, where devotional service becomes spontaneous and automatic. The first five stages of devotional service, one has to practice up to the state of nishta, And then by such practice, one gradually gives up the bad habits that takes us away from the activities that are not so conducive for the proper environment to hear with devotion, to hear with the service attitude. We can hear, but unless our attitude is that of service, we can't hear. And if we have an attitude of service, that's good, but we also have to practice. And by practicing kirtan, then the result should be realization. That when we actually show that we're very serious about what we're hearing and trying to put into practice, then Krishna says, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. That I give more and more intelligence by which they can gradually come to me. In other words, as we practice, then there should be reciprocation with the super soul. The super soul should be giving us more and more inspiration. The problem is we practice just like when they go on book distribution. And at the beginning we're trying to practice kirtan. And generally speaking, not everyone is so receptive. So we're trying to practice kirtan. No one seems to appreciate our kirtan very much. And what's the alternative? Either you can curse the people and you can say, you're all going to hell and I think you all deserve it because you can't appreciate my kirtan here. Anyone who doesn't appreciate my kirtan must be a demon. So one can think like that. And of course the kirtan won't go very far. Or one can think, well, I must be doing something wrong. And then starting to pray to Krishna, please Krishna, give me the intelligence, give me something to do out here other than just chant myself. And if Krishna sees that we're trying to engage, not that, alright Krishna, send me the people and everything should be alright, then I won't have any worries. No, we have to still engage, we have to still try to be enthusiastic, and then when Krishna sees our sincerity, then Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, he gives us the intelligence what to do to make our kirtan better. And even people come by, they stop, they take a book, and then we think, well, now I learned the secret. Whatever we think the secret is. And people start taking books, now we think, now I have all the potency. And then suddenly, we get more and more proud, and then suddenly it all disappears. No one hears our kirtan anymore, and we're back where we started from, square one. So the real kirtan has to go on, and then there should be smaranam. That smaranam is more or less that to understand things properly. On book distribution, for instance, it probably means that things work only if I'm surrendered to Krishna. That I'm not the controller, I'm not the all-pervading super soul. All I am is simply trying to be a humble servant of Krishna. And the humbler a servant of Krishna I become, the things will go better. But generally speaking, smaranam also means that when I'm engaged in kirtan, as it says, then remembrance of Krishna comes spontaneously. That there are different stages of progressive Krishna smaranam, or of the stages. So the first one is called Smarana Dasa, as we read the other day. Shravana Dasa. The state of just putting ourselves in a position to hear regularly. And then by hearing regularly, we come to Varana Dasa. So Varana Dasa means when we actually start accepting what we hear. That is, we actually start engaging kirtan. We actually start appreciating what we heard and actually do something practical. Now, appreciation, as it says, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but something in English about imitation is a compliment or something?
Imitation is the finest form of flattery.
Flattery, compliment or something, complimenting someone. So when we actually kirtan, that means we're actually accepting what we heard. Kirtan means not, as they said, not just we repeat, but we actually follow. So that's called Varna Dasa, the state of acceptance. And then the next stage, Smarana Dasa, the stage of experience. So we're glorifying Krishna, we're serving Krishna, we're doing so many things for Krishna, so we expect eventually to become Krishna conscious. Sometimes what happens is that the devotees, they come to class, for instance, regularly, they chant their rounds regularly, they do service regularly, and then they think, well, I'm not Krishna conscious, I'm not experiencing a taste. Where's the taste? And then they think, well, maybe the process is wrong. But then we have to really look at the process, where we're actually following the process. So the process is ultimately very simple, but complicated at the same time. Therefore, even a shravanam or shravanam, it's not so simple in the sense that we have to give up unmotivated activities, we have to give up our material motivations, we have to be in a nice atmosphere, we have to follow the acharyas, we have to do so many things just at the stage of shravanam, just to do it properly. And then as we gradually get into the stage of kirtan, we're actually starting to follow a little bit more closely. You know, that's not so easy. Because then we become aware of how difficult it is to follow sometimes. We go along for a week or a couple of days or something, and everything seems to go very smoothly, and we think, wow, I got the process down. And then suddenly some of the dust that was underneath the rug starts coming up, and we think, where did this come from? I thought I solved that. And then some of our past habits, our past activities start appearing before us, and we become overwhelmed, and I think, oh, it didn't work. I thought I had it all down, but now I can see it didn't work. And then we go through this period of the cloud and the smoke, and we're trying to find our way through the darkness, and suddenly we see a little clearing. There it is again! I got it back! Now I'm a pure devotee again. Now it's all clear, and I'm going ahead forward, and then suddenly some of the other dust comes up, and go, where did this come from? What's going on here? So one has to be patient too. Patient, confident. Gradually, as one goes through enough clearings and dust, one knows that here it is again. I'm clear, but you know, a few dusty storms coming up ahead, I see. One doesn't become so disturbed. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, which is probably surprising when you get up to the 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, and then Arjuna is asking, what are the symptoms of self-realized soul? And then Krishna says, pravritim cha nivritim cha. No, I should probably... aprakasham pravritim cha pramada moha eva cha nadveshti samparitani nivritani kankshati. So that's translated as one who doesn't hate attachment and illumination, attachment and delusion when they're present, though longs for them when they're absent, remains unaffected, knowing well that the modes of nature alone are acting and that he's aloof from it. So then the question is, when we're illumination, what does it mean that we don't hate illumination and become attached to it? Isn't that what we want, is knowledge? But that knowledge goes beyond the material mode of goodness. Sometimes we may be in a situation where we're bewildered. So does that mean that now I should become really, you know, where's the knowledge, where's the attachment? No, one has to remain tolerant. One has to remain in a situation where even when there's not illumination, even when there's not something auspicious, still we remember I'm Krishna's servant. And that even though I may be in a suffering condition, I may be in a difficult position, still I remain tolerant and I try to go on the best I can with my devotional service. Not expecting how can a great soul like me ever be put into so much difficulty. And even if there's difficulty, why am I bewildered? This is not proper. You know, I'm trying the best I can. Why is Krishna putting me in a situation of bewilderment? Why did he take my enthusiasm away? Doesn't he even want me to love him? So many things may appear. Generally, it's because we expect more out of ourselves than we're actually capable of. Not, we're expecting more out of our material circumstances than actually is appropriate. We're expecting ourselves to be on a higher level than actually we're actually capable of being on. Someone has to be a little patient with oneself, patient with the circumstances. Matra sparsha sukundeya shitoshna sukadukada agama payano nityastam titikshasva varada. So, this titikshasva, this tolerance, means if we can tolerate our own situation, then we can tolerate other people's situation also. So this titikshasva, then we can go on with kirtan, we can go on with hearing kirtan in spite of the difficulty. Gradually. Engage in following, engage in glorifying, and then the result should be gradually, we actually become conscious of Krishna. Of course, that consciousness of Krishna, smarana dasa, at every stage, we always have to remember it is by mercy. It's not vaidhi sana bhakti, that is by very strictly following all the rules and regulations, well, can elevate one. But for most, there's kripa siddha, there's sadhana siddha, but in this age, we can't expect very many sadhana siddhas. It's just not very conducive for sadhana siddha. What we can expect is kripa siddha. Kripa. So what is that kripa? Does it mean we don't have to follow sadhana? No, it means even we hear from the devotees, as mentioned here, mach chitta, mach katha prana, because that's what we're really trying to do. We're sitting around here, and we're trying to hear from each other and trying to find out, just like Prabhupada says, scientists, they sit around, they talk about their experiments, they talk about what worked and what didn't work, and this way they get inspired to do more experiments, try out more things. So, we're just like scientists, we're supposed to be like scientists, talking about our realizations, our experiences, and in this way we become inspired to serve Krishna, we learn some technique of how to become more stable in our service to Krishna, how to maintain our enthusiasm, how to get Krishna's intelligence so we make things better and better and better. And then when Krishna sees, well, here my devotees are, they're trying to make things better, so let me give them some mercy. So this desire to improve, especially to please Krishna, then Krishna becomes very compassionate, anukampa. And then he gives us some mercy. And then after receiving that mercy, if we don't become satisfied, you know, now I got what I wanted, then we go on with the hearing and chanting some more. Prabhupada says, generally, our motivation is not so pure. Chatura vidha bhajante ma janasapitya arjuna arti jignasi artarati jnani chabaratar shiva. We get up to the first stages, that is shravana. Oh, I'm in distress, Krishna, what to do? So this takes us from the person who's in distress, the person who's trying to figure out how to solve his economic problems or his security, to the devotee who's inquisitive to try and figure out how to solve other people's problems. It takes us up to that level, just hearing, and then a little kirtan. And there's some remembrance of Krishna, but because it's motivated, because it's not really very complete shravana, because there's a lot of motivation, especially distress. So Prabhupada said, especially in our movement, we find that many people out of distress have come, and when they become a little economically well situated, or free from their distress, then they give up the process, do something else. That means that they didn't really understand the process very well. So to go on, in spite of all problems, in spite of all difficulties, to sort of break through onto the higher platforms of devotional service, then one has to be tolerant. And one has to change the motivation. The motivation ultimately has to come to the stage of the Brahman and the mode of goodness. So when we factually become situated in the mode of goodness, or when we're gradually, it's not that, you know, One day Brahma comes with his certificate and gives us, you know, you're a true Brahmin now, here's your degree. Sometimes we think like that. Now I'm going to take second initiation. Now, at the fire sacrifice, when they give me my sacred thread, along with it comes the mode of goodness. So I can eat with my left hand now, I don't have to wash after I, you know, pass, and because I'm in the mode of goodness, everything is good. No, it's not so easy to come to the mode of goodness. It takes hearing, chanting, and above everything else, it takes gradually seeking the higher motivation. The higher motivation being, simply I'm doing this to please Krishna. So the Brahmin, he understands that for so long I had so many other motivations. My body, you know, wasn't comfortable. I felt a little nervous, insecure. I was trying to figure out how to solve other people's problems. But no matter how much my body became secure and comfortable, still, it never lasted. No matter how much I was able to solve other people's problems, still, I couldn't solve my own, ultimately. And therefore, the motivation becomes to the second level of devotional service, gradually, to the Madhyama Adhikari platform, where prema, the goal is to get prema, to make friends with the devotees, to help the innocent, to avoid the atheists. Then one sees that that's the goal. That's the actual motivation by which I should perform my devotional service. Then the actual ability to hear increases, the willingness to serve increases, the experience of Krishna consciousness increases. And then, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, then the goal becomes, hearing Krishna book at that stage, hearing about Krishna becomes enlivening and enlightening. But here Narada is mentioned. So Narada, being a first class devotee, he's beyond that platform. That means that it's not only enlivening and enlightening to hear about it, but Narada, whatever he hears, he actually experiences directly. He experienced by hearing about Krishna, he's in the spiritual world with Krishna, experiencing unlimited transcendental pleasure, increasing every moment, becoming more and more Krishna conscious. So this is called first class devotee. So Narada is a first class devotee. We shouldn't think, oh, daksha, who cares about daksha? Oh, the poor Kumaras. Gyanis. Ooh, Gyanis. No, if we could become as elevated as daksha and the four Kumaras, I mean, we'd be on a super high platform. These are super exalted personalities. But Narada is almost inconceivable. How wonderful Narada is. So we don't follow the four Kumaras, exactly. Although we certainly pay them all respects. And we don't follow daksha, although we certainly pay him all respect too. But Narada we try and follow. And what do we do? Is it very difficult? Maybe it is difficult. But we have to be always ready to serve. Or at least we have to be ready to serve once in a while. We have to practice becoming ready to serve. And we have to develop good behavior. Not that I'm a servant, watch out. I mean, I'm in power. Anyone who gets in my way gets run over. Because I'm just like an empowered machine. No, we also have to have good behavior because that's part of the service. Krishna wants us to make other, to serve people, to actually make people happy, not to run them over. I always remember that. Because Prabhupada had his priorities too. That if we, you know, better to do some service than just to have some good behavior. I always remember that cartoon that Prabhupada really liked a lot, where, at least he laughed when he saw it. There was a book distributor in the airport, as I mentioned before, and he, in the cartoon, this is in a big newspaper in America, and he had a big book bag full of books, and he was in the airport, and he saw someone come down the aisle. So he put out his hand like this, fully outstretched, and said, "Hi, how you doing?" The next picture is this man looks around, sees the hand, and puts out his hand too. Then the two hands grab, and the next picture is this big cloud of smoke. And there's a foot here, and there's an arm there. The book is flying, you know, everything is all smoke. And at the end, there's the man on the ground, he's unconscious. And the book is stuffed in his mouth. And the devotees walk away counting the money. With a big smile on his face. So when Prabhupada saw this, he began to laugh. This is not ideal. But I think Prabhupada laughed because at least the book was distributed. So this is not shilana, good behavior. Shilena, anushilana. So we also have to follow the footsteps of the previous acharyas. We actually have to do things that are pleasing to Krishna. And prashrayena, by meekness. So we may have good behavior, we may always be ready to serve, but we also have to be aware of the fact that we're an instrument. That no matter how good we think we are, no matter how much we're serving, that we're simply doing this all by the mercy of our spiritual master and Krishna. By the mercy of the previous acharyas and Krishna, we can do something. So this is Rupa Goswami's in this introduction, that we should always think ourselves to be instruments in the hands of the previous acharyas. So Narada Muni was perfect in this. He's perfect and always becoming more perfect, because he always knows that he always feels himself to be imperfect, always be ready to learn from the devotees and become more perfect. So we have to follow in his footsteps in the same way, and then gradually we can become better than where we are now. And as soon as we give up this jignasu, as soon as we give up the submission and the jignasu and the service, then even if we are trying to become Krishna conscious, then this is not possible. The Prabhupada writes, when there's always submission, when the devotee is always submissive, and is ready to render service, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So we've come here to the Hare Krishna movement to become inquisitive, because we want to find out about Krishna. We want to know Krishna. It may not be so easy to know Krishna. You know, it's not just sitting around in class and suddenly, you know, Krishna, one day we walk down the street and Krishna says, "Hi, how you doing? It's me, Krishna." No, it takes tapasya. It takes a tremendous amount of austerity. Of course, Prabhupada never emphasized that very much, especially at the beginning. But here the devotees are most of us have been sitting around here for a long time. So Prabhupada generally at the beginning would say, "Yeah, just chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day, and at the end of life, Lord Chaitanya will come and take you back to Godhead." We all thought, well, that's very nice. But then we started to notice not everyone was chanting the 16 rounds every day. And then people started to, they didn't take that so seriously. So maybe it's true, I can't say, that if we just chant our 16 rounds a day, which is not so easy to do without following the process, then Prabhupada said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will take us back to Godhead. But if we actually chant 16 rounds a day seriously, and we actually try and follow the process and become Krishna conscious, then I'm sure Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not only before the end of this life, but during this life, will take us back to God. We won't have to wait till the end of the life. So we have to follow the footsteps of Narada Muni. We have to see that we're doing that. And in the association of devotees especially, we have to take help of the devotees. I think one of the things that has to be introduced more into our society is this assessment. Because most of us were a little allergic to material life, because we don't really think that anyone really has a very good motivation. That's how we've been trained up. Not to trust anyone. We don't trust our neighbors, we don't trust our parents, we can't even trust our own mind most of the time. What to speak of anyone else? So therefore, someone tells us something, you know, "Prabhu, you're sleeping in japa," and go, "Wow, I may have been a little asleep, but I know about this guy. He goes around finds faults with everyone. If I should become too receptive, you know, who knows? I'll be under his whammy for some time. So we're not so sometimes receptive for the advice, for the counsel, for the association of the other devotees. We're a little reluctant to take their, especially their criticism. But actually, that's what the devotees are meant to do. Prabhupada once used to say that, or we can take the example of Jagannath Misra. So Jagannath Misra, he used to chastise Lord Chaitanya. So one Brahmin came in his dream and said, "My dear Jagannath Misra, don't you realize that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is self-effulgent? He's God himself. He doesn't have to take any instructions from you." He said, "I don't know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. All I know is that he's my son. And it's the duty of the father to instruct the son." So all night long they had an argument. And finally the Brahmin at the end, he walked out of the dream in bliss. He was completely ecstatic. And Jagannath Misra continued, not all the time, he was very loving to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when he thought it was necessary, he chastised him. So, Prabhu means, we have to develop the mood. It's easy when I think, everyone is calling me Prabhu, therefore I must be everyone's Prabhu. And then you go around, you say, "Well, that's right, I'm everyone's master." And then you say, "My dear Prabhu, can you do this?" And you go, "Who do you think you are anyhow? I'm your Prabhu. Don't you remember? I'm Prabhu. Prabhu? As far as I remember, you're Das, Das, Anu Das." So generally we think everyone else is my Das and I'm Prabhu. And it's a little painful to realize that I'm supposed to be Das and everyone else is supposed to be Prabhu. So that's what makes everything sweeter. So that takes some conversion. And that means take some practice. We have to be willing to hear from the devotees, and if they have some legitimate correction, something that actually is helpful, beneficial for our service, rather than react with a knee-jerk, you know, as soon as you touch the knee, it immediately jerks up. As soon as one says, "Prabhu, you're doing this so-and-so wrong," you go, "What? Who do you think you are anyhow? Who do you know who you're talking to? It's me." And even if we don't say it, as soon as we think like that, then it becomes very, very difficult to hear from anyone anything which will actually help us progress. But if we become tolerant, if we tolerate our minds, our conditioning, and then actually hear what the devotee has to say and think about it, consider it, pray to Krishna to understand it, and then if we consult with others about it, if it's not so clear, then it may be very beneficial, just going through the process. This is what makes the human being. This is what actually ends our conditioning. And the result is, if we break out of conditioning, then hearing becomes very much more pleasant. Then we actually kirtan, we become able to do kirtan much better. And then as Krishna sees our sincerity, then smarana, actual Krishna consciousness, manifests itself. So Narada is the expert at that. And we can follow in his footsteps and gradually become expert like Narada Muni. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you were saying that if we chant seriously and follow this process, then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will take us back to Godhead, even in this life. Can you please explain more what you mean by this statement, especially the part "even in this life"?
Go back to Godhead in one's self-same body. This is Sanatana Goswami's Yata Kanchana Yati Diksha Jnana Vidanina. That by the process of Diksha, that one can be transferred, or can be converted from a material, from into a Brahman. So of course that conception is that I sit at a fire sacrifice and they hand me the sacred thread and now I'm Brahman. That, of course, that's not what it means. It means by the actual process of Diksha, if we follow the whole process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, which is what Diksha is meant for, the whole process, then we can be converted into an actual Brahman. Of course, Brahma Janatiti Brahmanaha, that the self-realized Brahman, he's a Vaishnava. So the spiritual world doesn't mean, it means that there's another world, which is Krishna's pastimes. Krishna exists eternally in sound. So there's Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam, all the narrations about Krishna mean the spiritual world. Wherever Krishna is, that's the spiritual world. So we can actually directly meet Krishna through sound, through remembrance. And also, we can go back to the spiritual world just by making this into the spiritual world. This into the spiritual world means that if we act as a perfect devotee with the right attitude, then we're in the spiritual world. Then we're in Goloka Vrindavan or Gokula Vrindavan, but we're in the spiritual world. So we don't have to change our body. Not that we become necessarily this body, because we have a spiritual body, but we're in the spiritual world, even within this body. And it's not that it's all of a sudden. Somehow or another in Western world we're thinking. So this is the process by which transcendental knowledge is delivered and by which sin is destroyed. It's a process, a gradual process. So Krishna explains that process in Bhagavad Gita, for instance, in the 12th chapter. So we shouldn't think either I'm in the spiritual world or I'm completely in Maya. It's not like that at all. It may be some things like that, but it's not necessarily like that. We have to learn Krishna consciousness, and then we can see if I'm going in the right direction or I'm going backwards. Sometimes, because we're in the material world, means darkness. Therefore we pray, Om Agyanatimirandasya Agyananjana Salakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We pray because we're in darkness. We have to come to the light. And sometimes when we're in darkness or we're in a forest and everything is very unclear, then we need a compass. So we can go in the right direction. Not that just because I have a compass, therefore I'm there. No, we have to look at the compass, we have to read it right, we have to go in the right direction. And eventually we'll get there. So we have to go from the darkness to the light. And for that, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. We have the Shastra to guide us. We have the Guru to guide us, especially Prabhupada's example and his instructions. And he's also his followers. Guru doesn't mean simply the person I took initiation from. But anyone who's more enlightened than I am in the process of devotional service, we have to treat them like guru, or else I can't come to the level they're on. If I'm not submissive to them, if I don't have good behavior, if I'm not meek, if I'm not ready to serve their instructions, then how can I progress? So, and we have to become submissive to the devotees, to our gurus. And we have to appreciate the sadhus. Even those who aren't giving us instructions directly, we have to appreciate the example of the sadhus. And from those guides, when we take shelter of them, then Krishna within the heart, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, then he'll give us the intelligence to understand our gurus, he'll give us the intelligence to understand the sadhus, he'll give us the intelligence to understand the scriptures. And then when we take that intelligence and we utilize it in Krishna's service, then Evanu Kamparadam, then Krishna will enlighten us and take away the darkness, and then gradually we'll come to the light by Krishna's mercy. Yes,
sometimes you practice the process, and then suddenly it becomes very easy and very, very nice and very attractive. We say, well, actually, so it is very easy, and no daily copy. And then another, now you do the art thing, it's so attractive, you want to do the whole day art thing. And then another time, it's not like that. Personally, I never worked it out why that moment when I'm doing and I get a result and at another moment not.
Well, you can read the Madhuri Kandambini. So the devotee, Krishna comes to him with all his transcendental realm, Srimati Radharani, the Jamuna, Govardhan Hill, he's completely overflooded with ecstasy. He's all his senses have become non-different from each other. Krishna's given him Kripa Shakti, so they've been intensified to an unlimited degree. So he's simultaneously tasting, smelling, hearing, and touching everything simultaneously with all his senses fully enlivened. He's overwhelmed with ecstasy. He keeps on fainting, so Krishna has to keep on reviving him due to his intense ecstasy. Krishna's embracing him, and finally it's all, you know, Krishna leaves. And what does the devotee think? He thinks, well, what happened? What, you know, was this a dream? What was going on? Then he thinks, well, maybe it was due to some, you know, inadvertent past pious activity I'd done in my sometime, or some blessing with a sage that I was able to, you know, get a little mercy. And then he searches after that mercy some more. He doesn't think, well, you know, what happened? I'm such an exalted devotee. How could Krishna disappear like that? No, he thinks due to the mercy of some, you know, very nice devotee, must have blessed me, and therefore I got this experience. One has to take it very humbly. And in the mood that, you know, Krishna is, by some reason, by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of Krishna, I've been put into this nice situation, and I must appreciate them more, I must become more humble, and serve the devotees more. And then, so we have to give the credit to our the previous acharyas, to the association of devotees, and pray for their mercy that we may get their mercy more. And then when there's some difficulty, we should think, you know, I probably, you know, I've committed so many offenses in my past life that Krishna is so, or in this lifetime, Krishna is so kind that instead of giving me the electric chair, he's just giving me a little pinprick. That actually I deserve to be, you know, in a much more miserable condition, but Krishna is still kind, he's letting me go on with my service, and he's still allowing me to stay in the association of devotees, and I must tolerate this and go on with my service and pray and try and do my service even better, try and get even more of the mercy of the devotees. Then Krishna says, Sadayavak. Then such a devotee, he gradually comes to the perfect state. He thinks like that. How can a devotee criticize others? Well, I guess in the material world there's an understanding of what criticism means. Criticism generally is equated in the material world with envy. I don't like what you're doing. I personally don't like what you're doing. It's making me feel bad. Therefore, in order to express my anger towards you, to know that you're not serving me properly, let me express it in the form of criticism. But that's not what transcendental, in other words, criticism in the sense that another devotee is trying to help another devotee. Not that I feel, you know, bad about what you're doing to me because it's making me feel bad. No, that's that criticism. That's, no. My dear Prabhu, I love you and I'm concerned about you. And because I want you to help progress even more in devotional service, because that's I'm your eternal servant, therefore, you know, I'm falling in a very humble way, out of love for you, out of concern for you. Therefore, I'm trying to tell you something from my realization that's coming through the mercy of my spiritual master and the previous acharyas and Krishna. They want me to do the service to humbly explain to you as a service. Now, that service can be rendered only if the person is willing to receive it. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Anuvegam karam vakyam satyam prihitam chayat svadayayam vyasanam chayva mangmara tapa uchite. So the austerity of speech means to say things which are pleasing. So that's hard enough, to say things that are pleasing. That's an austerity. And then to say things which are beneficial. Well, that's even what you really got to think about. Saying something pleasing and beneficial at the same time. And to say something which is following Shastra. Well, then you really got to think hard about that. You know, I probably couldn't say many words during the day. And Hita anuvegam karam vakyam satyam, which is truthful. I got to be truthful. I got to be pleasing. It has to follow the scriptures and the authorities. It has to be beneficial. Boy, I just will not say anything during the day. And then, anuvegam. You're not supposed to agitate anyone's mind. My God, you know. What is going on? How can I say anything? So then Prabhupada writes in the purport that one can say the truth, but not if it will agitate someone else's mind. But you can say the truth to a person who will accept it, one who's taking a subordinate position. Of course, we're holding class, and of course, the devotees generally understand in class the speaker. He can speak any kind of way, sometimes, just for the effect and whatever. Although there should be some caution there. But Prabhupada, he would say, you know, things in class, Svavidrahostrakarar, samstuta purusha pashu, nayat karmapatiyo peto, jata karma, jata namaka jagarja. Hogs, dogs, camels, asses, they're all hogs, dogs, camels. Someone said, wow, what kind of speaker is that? You know, we're all hogs, dogs, and camels. So Prabhupada said, I'm not saying this, Krishna's saying it. I'm just repeating what Krishna's saying. So we have to be a little cautious. But in our personal dealings, you know, we have to be more cautious. Prabhupada was so generally very kind and liberal in his personal dealings. Although in his classes he was quite strict. In his personal dealings he was much more soft and liberal. But he had to, you know, class means you have to give the general philosophy. You're talking to so many people unless you're the super soul. And even the super soul, even when Krishna gives instructions, he doesn't give them to ordinary persons. Gives into Arjuna or the sages or someone. In any case, one has to be a little cautious in both circumstances, but especially cautious when one is dealing personally with a devotee. So we have to see, does this devotee accept me as an authority? If they don't accept me as an authority, then suddenly I go, I am the authority, I have realized where you're really at, and I know how to improve your life, and you surrender to me and everything will be alright. And I always think, oh my God, who is this? Where did they come from? And then we, from the top of the mountain, we give down the commandment, and they think, oh my God. So it may not be, unless the devotee is quite advanced, it may not be appreciated, even as we may feelingly want to present it. We may have the best intentions. We may have the best realizations. But if the devotee is not really, or anyone is not willing to hear it, then we may be creating a kind of solving their problem. We may be creating a few for ourselves, too. So we have to be a little thoughtful. You know, consider who we're talking to before we start. And you know, don't worry about becoming materially attached. Just keep on serving the devotees. And if you become materially attached to the devotees, that's not so bad. Because at least you're attached to the devotees. But as far as taking that, Krishna will take care of. We have to come to class and we have to find out what material attachment is and things. Then we have to refine our service to the devotees. But as long as we keep on serving the devotees, then gradually these material attachments will go away and we'll come to the perfect state of devotional service. It'll be done purely out of love. But if we're recognizing we're materially attached, that's not so bad either. At least we're starting to understand what material attachment is. The difference between material and spiritual attachment. So that means it'll go away after some time. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam. Jai. 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 Jai.